Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 245 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the VW GTI, the Kia Soul, the Range Rover Evoque, electric Corvettes, the Dodge Hornet, and more. All that coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 245 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abuel Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakeland, and I'm going to mention my new podcast, Fast Women, which is on Newsweek.
Nothing better than Fast Women.
Exactly.
Fast women.
Fast women.
Is there like a guitar wail after the...
No, it's not quite that guitar. You know, maybe you should need to record something where there's a guitar wail for us. Really aggressive intro music.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from a bunch of bands who's going to do a guitar wail for Nicole's new podcast.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right. Let's see, Robbie, you were hanging out on the beach last week. So, what were you driving?
So last week okay. Getting a rental car, of course, is still a little crazy. It's not as bad as it was, but you know, you're still like a little like, oh, what am I going to get? But when I signed up, through Avis, it's like, oh, do you want a Kia Soul or similar? And I'm like, well, yeah, I do want a Kia Soul or similar. Because, and then I got there, as soon as I landed, you can get on the app and you can make sure you can like lock in your car. And I got the Kia Soul. I got a little black, you know, 2022 Kia Soul, you know, okay. Car rental spec. And I wanted the Kia Soul because the Kia Soul is exactly what it needs to be as that car. It's not trying to be like too crazy, but it also feels really nice for what it is. And you have a lot of, you put that back seat down. It's essentially a box, and boxes are easy to store things in, which is why when we move with boxes, not with like triangles or ovals. You stick everything in a box.
It's like a moving Tetris puzzle.
Yeah,
it's like a moving Tetris puzzle. So I got the Kia Soul. It had wireless CarPlay. Again, car rental spec, which is just like, you know, the cheapest one they can get.
Right.
And it, you know, it only had one USB port. That was sort of it's sort of like,
no. Oh, the horror. One USB port.
Only one of us could charge our phones at a time, which was fine because most of the time I get off because I go swimming and sometimes I take my phone out and make a little video of the water for no one wants to see video of water, by the way. But you do it anyway. So you can't charge your phone. So I got the Kia Soul. I drove it around the island of Kauai for a week, and it was absolutely marvelous. We could even with the back seats up, we could stick in our fins. We could stick in a tiny cooler, a couple bags. You know, we'd have to throw our backpacks in the back seat at some point, but it was great. And I got 35 miles per gallon over the course of the week.
Which considering gas was probably, what, about $7 a gallon in Hawaii?
How much is it there?
That was, okay, so that was surprising. Gas was less expensive in Hawaii than it was in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
Everything has to do with, like, the taxes of, you know, California gasoline taxes are pretty high. So I think Hawaii's gasoline taxes are probably lower, but also they have to ship everything, so it kind of brings it up. So it was $5.45. For a gallon of gas, which was essentially, it was like $5.50 here. I think it's like $5.30 now here something. I don't know. I don't get a lot of gas because we have the EV. So I'm always like, what is gas cost? How much is a banana? $10. So we, and of course also, so we get 35 miles per gallon, but the sort of caveat is that no one speeds in Hawaii. One's in a hurry. No one, if it's 40, everyone's doing 40, maybe 45. Like, no one, they're like, and the top speed limit on Kauai is 50 miles an hour.
Woohoo!
That's it. That's the, and I got to 60 at one point. I was like, oh, man.
You crazy man, you.
Out of control.
Were you doing driving like down Waimea Canyon or something?
No, no, we didn't even, this is just going between Princeville and Kapaa.
Okay.
And so we were just, yeah, they're like, oh, there's a part where you can do 50, and we were doing 60. And I was like, oh, it was madness.
Dangerous,
so
you're not, dangerous man.
So you're not driving very fast, which means you're not using as much, you know, gas. And so the 35, if it had been on a freeway, of course, it would have been lower. The Kia Soul, car rental, everything you need, you have your phone, and it's great because especially when you're traveling, you don't want to learn a new navigation system, and most of them are still kind of crap, especially when it comes down to rental specs. It's like, you know, the lowest of the low. So whatever navigation they have in there is navigation from like 5 or 6 years ago because they want you to upgrade to the next level, blah, blah, right. blah.
Fortunately, the island of Kauai is only 30 miles wide and, what, 20 miles north to south, so it's kind of hard to get lost.
Yeah, there's only one, like, there's one main road. If you can find the one main road, you're like, all right, cool.
Go wraps around the island from one end of the Nepali coast to the other.
Yeah, you're just like, all right, we're good.
And in between, you have a dead volcano.
In between, yeah, dead volcano. So if you are going on a trip, I highly recommend when you are looking for, unless you have, like, a bunch of kids or you need a lot of room, or you want a convertible, which, by the way, if you get a convertible in Hawaii, everyone knows you're a tourist. If you get a convertible or you get a Jeep, like, oh.
That's fair. I hadn't thought about the Jeep thing, but yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. The Jeep thing is very much like, and people who own Jeeps in Hawaii, they'll like do something to them so they don't look like a rental car. But yeah, we did a Jeep once. We went full, like once I was like, oh, we should, they were like, oh, we'll give you a Jeep for $5 more a day. And I was like, all right. And this is before the refresh. And I absolutely wanted to drive that thing into the sea. But the new Jeeps are great, but the old Jeeps not so much. Anyway, Kia Soul rental, 35 miles per gallon in Hawaii. If you, it's just you and two or three other people, it's plenty of room.
And you know, if you're looking to buy a cheap car, assuming you can find one, you know, the Soul, I mean, what you probably had was the LX trim. That's usually what you find in a rental fleet. That's the most basic one. $19,290, you know, and then probably about $1,000 for the delivery charge. So, you know, 20 grand, you know, for all that stuff that you just described.
For a good little car, it gets pretty good gas mileage.
Yeah.
The first time I drove the Soul is when I broke my ankle a couple of years ago. And so I couldn't drive. That's the only car we had was either the BRZ or the Mini. I mean, it doesn't matter. They were manual transmission. And I couldn't drive it because, you know, my ankle was broken. And so I would have to hobble down the stairs in my apartment, down the street to the car share place, and they had a Kia Soul, and I was just like, ugh. And I got in it, and within three blocks, I'm all, this car is amazing.
I always thought the Kia Soul is that car that, like, it looks, because it's so, you know, like you said, it's a giant box. Like, this is going to be miserable. This is going to be awful. This is going to be, and you're like, this is kind of fun. I sort of like this little thing.
Yeah, you're like.
You know, it's not, I mean, it came out, you know, around the same time as the Scion XB and the Nissan Cube. And both of those cars are long gone, no longer
right.
available.
Yeah,
you
no.
Know, this is the only one that survived, you know, and I think it's because it does have that kind of funky attitude to it, you know, slightly different design. You know, I mean, it's still a box, but, you know, it's kind of a cool looking box.
I think I'm remembering right from they launched the most recent one in the presentation, and they talked about it, how all the other little boxy cars are no longer of this world. But then they talked about the design of this, and I want to say they compared it to like a warthog. I think they're like, yeah, it's kind of like a warthog. And it's like, huh.
It is okay, kind of like a little warthog.
Yeah, yeah, right. Can you see it now? Yeah. So I always think of that when I
It's also the one that the hamsters drive around in.
Yeah. They don't do the hamsters anymore, and I don't think they're ever going to bring back the hamsters, and I liked the hamsters.
Everyone liked that. They're party hamsters.
It's like Mazda's Zoom Zoom. Bring back Zoom Zoom. I liked that better.
Bring back the Zoom Zoom kid. He's like 35 now. He's like Zoom Zoom.
Zoom Zoom, whatevs.
Just heavy sigh.
Okay. What about you, Nicole?
Okay, so I had something I only had for a short time this week because I guess it's only up in my region for a little while, so I had like 3 days of this, but it was a fun 3 days. I had the 2022 Range Rover Evoque R Dynamic S. because the more words you have to describe your car, the cooler it gets.
And the more you can charge for it.
The more you can charge for it. Speaking of, so the base price on this is $46,300. I had a lot of extra bits and pieces, so it was $54,600. So it's a pretty significant amount of extra stuff. The most expensive of which, there is a blind spot assist pack that has blind spot assist, clear exit monitor, and a rear traffic monitor that was... that's not the most expensive. Oh, no, sorry, most expensive. The panoramic roof was $1,800. And this 20-inch wheels was $1,850. I don't think I would want the 20-inch wheels enough to pay nearly $2,000 for them. No. Do they look cool? Sure. $2,000 cool? Really? Yeah. So those are the two.
You're losing like ride quality, and you just keep putting bigger and bigger wheels.
But to be fair, though, the ride quality of this actually was quite nice. Like I was looking at all this and thinking, this is not going to be great. But you know, it's still a luxury car. You know. So it has the ride quality is actually pretty good. I didn't do it through my usual through the tunnel coming from the airport, but I did happen to drive to Boston on their craptastic roads, and it handled it all very well. What I most noticed about it driving though is, you know, back and forth, it's like a probably 45 minute to an hour drive from downtown Boston, and despite this being like a little SUV crossover, I don't know, I'm going to call it SUV, being a small SUV and those not being known for being like really easy and smooth and wonderful to drive on a highway, I had to watch my speed because I'm just like flying along and all of a sudden I look down and think, oh, that is faster than I meant to be driving right now, because it is just so smooth and easy and controlled to drive it that you don't realize you're going as fast as you're going, which I guess bad thing because you could get a ticket, but good thing in that it just is that nice to drive. It's not super roomy. It's like there's definitely bigger Range Rovers that you can pick than this one, but I like this one. It has a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder with 246 horsepower, 269 pound-feet of torque, and has a 9-speed automatic. It's got plenty of power. I mean, when you mash the gas on this, you're going to move. You're going to get out of your own way. It's easy to get it up to highway speeds. It handles really well. I really like this. I think the only thing, you know, took a little getting used to was the controls. And once you get used to it, it was awesome. But the controls for the heat... And for, there are these little round dials, but when you press them, they do other things. So think a round dial, if you put your thumb and your finger together about that big, and it looks like it's just temperature, and you turn it left, right, temp goes up, temp goes down. But then if you push it, it's also the air for the flow, like how fast is the fan on? And then you push the other side, and now you've got your settings for like your snow, your mud and ruts, I always call it cactus mode, because there's a cactus on Range Rover products, but it's like your sand mode, but it's cactus mode. So it's neat, but it has that moment when you're first playing with controls, you're like, wasn't that a half a second ago, the temperature, and now it's my drive modes? What did I do? Because you accidentally pressed when you just meant to turn it. So it takes a second for you, and then you think, oh, wait, no, these are just multifunctional things. Very cool. I thought the infotainment screen, now I'm trying to find the size on it, and I can't find it glancing at this real quick. It's not, it says 10 inches, 10 inch with navigation, blah, blah, blah. So it's a 10 inch screen. The way it's positioned, it feels kind of small. I don't know if it's just the way it's set in the dashboard a little bit, but it feels on the small side, and it doesn't look as crisp as what you find on some cars in this price point. Like it just felt, and I happened to use the navigation that was actually their navigation, not my, Apple, hey Siri, take me here kind of navigation. And it wasn't great to follow. It's not very clear. It's not very crisp. I mean, it's telling you the right way, but it just was not the best. In fact, there was a point where you're driving through the city and there's like an upper deck and a lower deck and they're slightly off center, but and the lower deck traffic was massively backed up. So all I see is this giant red line in this navigation. I could not figure out. I'm like, what am I missing? Should I be getting off the highway here? Because this looks like I'm going to be bogged down in traffic forever. It didn't give me enough detail to go, wait a minute, that's the lower deck, not the one that I'm on. So I'm going to stay put, not go to surface streets, because this is fine. If I was going into the city, it would be a mess. Some of them, you can tell the difference. Like they'll do a split, even if it's like barely
like a
split.
Bit.
Yeah, like a tiny little bit. And you can see like, wait, the red is not actually my road. It's parallel or under or above my road. You can't tell on their screen. Now, to be fair, I don't often use the native navigation in cars because your phone does it so well. But I do just to check it out. And on this instance, I'm like, yeah, that navigation isn't as nice as I would like it to be. And I think the screen, something about the crispness, it just didn't look the way I expected. But as far as driving it and the smoothness and it feeling Range Rover, you know, that luxury, but with a bit of ruggedness. It was really good. The cup holders are too small. There's my, I had giant iced coffees. I said to the guy, I want the largest iced coffee you have. I swear to God, it was the big gulp of coffees. It was huge. I'm like, well, I'm awake for the rest of the day. But it wouldn't quite, it almost didn't fit in the cup holder. The cup holder's very tiny. It's really designed for either a soda can or like it only can be one of those like to-go containers or to-go cups that has like the narrow bottom and the fat part up top. If it's not really narrow, like I put it on, like, oh God, I don't know if I can get that out of there now. And I'm going to pull this out and it's going to squirt out the top and there's going to be coffee all over my $60,000 Range Rover and I'm going to be in big trouble. So I barely, but I'm like, okay, not putting that back in there while I'm going to get it out. But so I like it. I mean, I like it overall. I think it looks cute on the outside. I like how it's very coupe like styling. And yet still when you open up the tailgate, there is a good amount of room. It's, you know, it looks more squished in the back than it actually is when you go to put stuff in there.
Yeah, to your comment about the 10-inch screen seeming kind of small, I think that I'm just looking at pictures of it. Mm-hmm. I suspect that's probably because it's a wide screen display.
Maybe.
You know, so it's got a, you know, kind of a really wide aspect ratio, so it's not very tall.
And it feels very squished. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember on the Evoque. Does the screen tip up when you're using it, or is it just because
it's fixed in the dashboard?
Okay.
It just
it's a kind of an angle away from you. So when you're looking at it, you're not looking at it perpendicular to your line of sight. It's you know, like looks like it's about a 45-degree angle. So that's going to make it look even smaller when you're looking at it. It looks shorter.
Right, and that's what I said. Like, I know it's not small.
Out.
It says 10. It's not tiny. It's not like it's a 5-inch screen. But the way it's positioned, it kind of feels like you're using a 5 or 6 inch screen. It feels like a much smaller screen than it is, even though I know realistically numbers don't lie in this case how big it is. But yeah, the positioning of it is kind of weird.
Well, then it's going to be also washed out because it's at such an angle. If you look at your phone, like if you look at it dead on and then you kind of tilt it, I mean, it's just a little bit, but it starts to look a little, it'll probably start to look a little washed out. And I'm sure that, you know, the screen in your phone is probably nicer than the screen in the Range Rover, so it's going to be even worse. And so it's a weird decision, is what.
And the Velar, which is the next size up from the Evoque, it's like in between the Evoque and the regular Range Rover. That one, I think the screen actually does tip up, so it's more vertical when you're using when you turn it on, and you know, so I think it's going to look like it's larger. So it's kind of strange that the one in the Evoque doesn't do that. It's been a while since I drove the Evoque. I couldn't remember.
It's very definitely one of those you get in and it, you know how it feels like, you know how you get into a car and you know for sure there's two different screen sizes. You have a standard that's an 8 and you have the fancy pants versions that have like a 10 or a 12 or whatever inch screen. When you first sit down, my thought was, oh, do I have like a base screen? I'm like, oh no, this is not a base screen, you know?
And it's the base. It's the base Range Rover, is what you got.
Yeah.
Yes, I got a base car. Right.
It's the entry level to the Range Rover lineup.
The funniest thing my daughter said to me. So we spent the weekend down in Boston as we're driving around. Went down this really fancy shopping street for kicks and giggles, and there's like G wagons and like really expensive cars all over the place. And then someone had like a Range Rover SV autobiography, all tricked out, you know, super expensive. And I said, oh, that's the same company that makes the car. She's like, oh, I thought we were driving a... This is from her, who's ridden a million cars. Oh, I thought this was just like a regular car. Is this supposed to be a nicer car? And I was like, ooh, ouch. Yeah, she didn't
realize...
Don't
let Stuart Shore hear that.
I know. It's like, oh, no. Like I said, you know, she's like, no, it just doesn't really feel like it. It just kind of... I was like, oh, kid thought it was like a doubt. Like, she's like, we were driving a Nissan or something. You know what I mean? I'm like, no. And that was just her impression, not knowing, but I thought, oh, so that's not good.
Earlier you mentioned the price of the package with the blind spot monitoring. How much was that again?
That one, I had them back. The blind spot was the blind spot actually is not that crazy. The blind spot is 830. I have the world's smallest print on this Monroney. It's the wheels that are 1850 and the panoramic roof that is 1800. I think it's 830 for the blind spot assist package. Then there's like an $800.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
climate package, and then I have random bits and pieces. I paid like, you know, it's like $500 or $600 here, $200 there for all sorts of different little bits and pieces that they've added.
Because just as a point of comparison, that $20,000 Kia Soul we were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yes.
That comes standard on that $20,000 base Kia Soul LX.
What, the blind spot thing?
Yes.
Boom. Yeah, I didn't hit anyone.
Well, so it comes standard like, with blind spot monitors.
Yeah. Nope. You're going to pay an extra, I think it's $830 for it. Are there any extra things that you really shouldn't be paying extra for in here? I mean, aside from that, extra for paint, $300 for a sound system. Oh, it's an extra almost $200 for a garage door opener. You know, the HomeLink garage door openers and the visor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's like $200. I don't know what this is. What is a handover pack? It's $25. Is that some like dealer prep thing? It literally says handover pack, $25.
Like a pack? Like P-A-C-K?
Like pack, P-A-C-K, like backpack, but just pack.
Maybe there's just like a little bag inside that has your, like, what
all
do you call
your paperwork
it?
And stuff.
Your paperwork.
Maybe they charge you $25 to get the paperwork for your car. I don't know.
Well, you get the paperwork, but if you want the paperwork in a nice little, like...
Oh, like a little drawstring satchel or something?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
That could
$25.
I mean, you wouldn't want all that loose paperwork floating around your
flopping
remote.
Around.
No, it would just be crazy flopping around your car.
Every time you open the window, it just flies around.
You can't have that kind of chaos in your little luxury SUV.
No,
exactly.
No chaos.
You need chaos. Refinement.
Yes, refinement. And refinement is a $25 handover pack.
There you go. lovely. All right. So that's the Range Rover Evoque. I had the 2022 Volkswagen GTI Autobahn. this is one of only two Golfs that are now available in the U.S. All the regular, more pedestrian VW Golfs, Americans don't want to buy those anymore. They don't want to buy small, you know, compact hatchbacks and stuff like that, except for Kia Souls, apparently. So VW has discontinued all the Golfs except for the GTI and the Golf R. And the Golf R is the high-end, like 300-some horsepower, all-wheel drive Super Golf. And the GTI, you know, I haven't driven the new Golf R yet, but in the previous generation, I actually preferred the GTI to the Golf R because the GTI is lighter, you know, The all-wheel drive on the Golf R, even though it's got more power, it feels kind of disconnected. You know, it doesn't feel as lively. You know, it doesn't feel like you can toss it around because it's got so much grip that, you know, it just does exactly what you tell it to. You know, whereas the GTI, you know, you take that thing through corners, you get that inside rear wheel hiked up, and, you know, it feels more fun and lively and spirited. And the same is true for this new one. I really like this GTI. This one came with, you can get it with a 7-speed DSG, but I highly recommend if you're going to buy a GTI, get a 6-speed manual. It's absolutely the best way to go. So this is the Mark 8 Golf platform. So the latest and greatest generation that debuted about a year or so ago in Europe. And the biggest complaint I have about this is the infotainment system, which I think shares a lot of its heart with the what you find in the ID4. You know, it's an all new infotainment system. It doesn't have the sluggishness and the lag that you find in the ID4, but it's a similar. It looks like a similar interface. It's not bad. It's not terrible. It does have support for both wireless Apple CarPlay and wireless Android Auto, so you don't actually even have to plug your phone in to use those. And so if you're gonna use those, great. You know, you can get it once you get your phone paired up. You don't have to mess with anything when you get in the car and start it. The phone projection interface comes up. That works well, but like the ID4. They've eliminated most of the physical controls, so you've got touch controls for volume and temperature and stuff, you know, in a strip along below the center touch screen, which, please, stop doing that.
It's so weird. Okay, keep going, because there's a whole issue I have with this.
Oh, Robbie has a rant, I sense.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, traditionally, GTIs always had a golf ball style shift knob, you know, looked like a golf ball. They've sort of retained that. You look at it from the driver's seat, looking at it, it looks more like what you find on most other cars now, you know, kind of smooth on the sides and a top surface, some red trim on it. But when you put your hand on it, you can feel the dimples on the back. And if you twist your head around and look at the front side of the shifter that's facing away from you, it has that golf ball kind of finish to it with the dimples. So that's a, you know, nice little throwback. The seats are really great in this thing, really comfortable and supportive, even though there's not a whole lot of adjustments. You know, it's like in the Civic Si, really good seats. Not a whole lot to complain about, really, with this thing. You know, fuel economy is about 28 miles per gallon. Lot, you know, the back seat is surprisingly roomy, and there's decent cargo space in the back. You know, I always suggest that, you know, for smaller cars like this, if there's a hatchback available, go for the hatchback instead of the sedan, because it's so much more useful, because you have that nice big opening. You can fold the back seats down and put big stuff in there if you need to. So the base GTI starts at I had it here somewhere. Starts at about 29,000, and this one was about 38,000 and change for the Autobahn version, which is the fully loaded version with the 20-inch wheels and everything. While I look that up again, Robbie, give us your rant.
Oh, so I get home one night. I've been driving this car. First of all, the haptic, the sort of soft touch buttons on the steering wheel are a train. They're horrible.
Yes,
because you're turning. If you have hands that are larger than medium, mm-hmm. you're just hitting all the buttons while you're driving. They're hard to like use, and it turns out that the below the touch screen where you have the controls for the heat, for your climate controls, and the volume, that isn't illuminated at night. So I'm trying to turn down the music, and what I'm doing is I'm turning up the heat. I'm just like, what's going on? What is going on?
So
what is going
on?
So
or if you're, you know, if like sometimes, you know, when I'm driving, I will stick, if I'm trying to hit the touch screen, I'll stick out my index finger to hit the touch targets, and I'll use my middle finger to sort of brace my hand, because, you know, when you're driving along, you know, and you're reaching out for a touch screen, which is why I hate touch screens in cars, you know, the end of your arm tends to move around a little bit. And so, you know, I use my middle finger to brace there while I'm hitting the touch target, so it's more precise, and I end up hitting those controls with my middle finger as I'm doing this. So that's very annoying. And you're right about the touch controls on the 3 and 9 spokes on the steering wheel.
It's such a great little car, and then they're like, oh, by the way,
We're
going to screw it up. We put it in the ID3. We put it in the ID4. No one likes it. But you know what? We already made all the parts. So,
yeah.
There's somebody else that has a little touch screen, like a little tiny touchpad that's like a 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter square.
Mercedes-Benz does that.
Mercedes. That's what and I hate it because I'm forever turning the wheel. And it's like, what? Why are the lights on? What is happening? The heat, the radio, what is going on? And I've literally just turned the wheel and managed to hit it 3 different ways.
Yeah.
That on a steering wheel. I get the idea. Like, this will be so cool.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So I found the prices again here because they didn't send me a Monroney for this one. The GTI S starts at $29,880, and then $1,000 for, so $31,000 for the S, almost $36,000 for the SE, and the Autobahn is $38,330, which with the delivery charge comes to $39,720. It's a $995 delivery charge, which, considering it's coming from all the way from Wolfsburg, is not bad. It's, you know, the Autobahn has a heads up display, which I could not find anywhere to actually turn that on. I could not find a control or a button or anything for that. So I could see it there. I could see where there's the thing on the top of the dash for that, but I could never actually figure out how to enable it. It also has adaptive dampers on it, leather seats, heated rear outboard seats, power driver seat with memory, light assist. Oh, and sorry, they're 19-inch wheels, not 20s. They look great. And, you know, I think I really like the look of the Mark 8 Golfs and especially the GTI. In the front, the lower part of the fascia, you know, it's got this kind of honeycomb grill there that echoes the look that you see on the ID models, like on the ID Buzz and the ID 4. And the fog lights are the driving lights in the corners are behind that inside of that. It's a cool look. It's distinctive, looks different from other stuff on the road. But it still looks like a VW. So, you know, aside from those annoyances with the touch controls, I really like the rest of it.
Just get used to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Just get used to it.
So that is the 2022 VW GTI.
And I have to show you, and you can't see this. Can you see this? Look in your guys' screens,
yep.
Guys.
Oh.
I have a pillow that they gave me from the thing, and it's actually the plaid interior. Yeah. The car.
Fancy.
Yeah. It's like my favorite little random press thing. I'm like, I'm going to put that pillow in my chair so I have my little Volkswagen GTI pillow.
Very nice. Cute. All right. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened this week. Let's start with the Corvette. During a interview, I think on Monday, and it's funny how, you know, a whole bunch of EV-related announcements or semi-announcements or teasers came out on Monday and Tuesday morning, just before Ford had their big celebration to launch production of the F-150 Lightning.
What?
Yeah, it's amazing. And GM kicked it off with news of the Corvette. Getting an electrified version in 2023 and then an all-electric version at some point in the unannounced future, which may be around 24 or 25. And they dropped a little 25-second teaser video of a Corvette wrapped in camo on a snow pad during winter testing. And in profile, when you see it launching, for the first time ever, you see the front wheels spinning up, telling us that this is probably going to be something similar to the configuration of the Acura NSX, where it had electric motors driving the front wheels and probably another electric motor in the rear, and the V8 engine in there as well.
Are we excited for this? I think everyone just kind of knew that this was coming. I mean,
yeah,
they said it was coming, but it was just like, oh, so here it is.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of hinted at it for, going back to, when they launched the C8, the mid-engine mm-hmm. C8 a couple of years back. And I think, when I've asked Mark Royce about it, he nodded and said, yeah, it's coming eventually. Wouldn't say when. But I think the thing that is strange about this is that for the last 3 years, Mark Royce has been adamant that GM was done with hybrids, that they weren't going to do any more hybrids. Yeah, after they canceled the Volt and they canceled the Malibu hybrid and everything else that had both an engine and an electric motor, he said, we're all in on electric. We're going electric. We're not doing any more hybrids. And here they are doing a hybrid Corvette, which, why?
I think you have to look at I try not to make an old white dude joke, but that's who buys Corvettes. And you're probably, mm-hmm. out of anyone who you're going to need to sort of talk into electrification, it's going to be old white dudes. I think that's probably the reason. They're like, okay, we'll start with the hybrid. They'll get used to that. And then they'll get the electric one. I mean, it's to say, we're not doing any more hybrids. And the kill the Volt, a thing that people loved.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, psych. We're doing it in the Corvette.
Psych.
I think they needed a transition. I think they were probably afraid that they were going to lose people. They went straight to EV just because people, old white dudes. I saw a gentleman get out of a new Corvette the other day who was wearing jeans and a black leather jacket.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, you, sir, are killing it.
When they officially were confirming all this was the amount of outright hand wringing on the part of everybody who is an old school must have gas engine, nothing else. Like people are either sort of, yeah, hey, well, yeah, we knew it was coming, yeah, whatever, or no, the end times. Like there was no in between. There's no, okay, fine, cool, whatever. You either were really super excited or you were jumping off a cliff. Like there was nothing in between.
And I think that's why there's the hybrid is coming. Yeah. To sort of lower, just sort of like ease them into it. It's cool. And, like if you want someone to get into Radiohead, you make them listen to a little bit of Coldplay first. I mean, no one wants to listen to Coldplay like on purpose, but you know, you kind of get them like, okay, here's the people, they have some stuff. All right, here's some Radiohead. Okay.
Slowly. They'll get them there slowly.
And I'm guessing that this probably won't be a plug-in hybrid, though, because I'm not sure they put enough battery, you know, because the fuel tank is down the center tunnel there, and I don't think there's enough room anywhere for a battery big enough for a plug-in hybrid if you still have the engine. I mean, once you take the engine out, take the V8 engine out, you know, then you've got plenty of room for a battery for an EV version, but not for a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
They'll use that hybrid just for launches. I'm guessing like a majority of it is just low-end torque takeoff to get people like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh dear. I don't know. I don't know how like gentlemen.
Oh dear. It's like Mini Pearl. Like what have you like regressed like 50 years? What happened?
I don't know. I'm trying to get into the mindset of a person who's older than me and drives a Corvette.
Okay. And that's how we lost all of our Corvette listeners.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be very nice.
I get it. Yes.
It's like, it's like me, people of a certain age, like myself, were ridiculously insane about Honda Civics. Honda Civics. Come on. I mean, Honda Civics are a great car. We absolutely love the Honda Civic. But if you're like, really? Honda Civic, huh? All right. So yeah.
I'm kind of at that bridge age there where, you know, I love Honda Civics, you know, and crazy Honda Civics, but I also love driving Corvettes, you know.
See, there you go. You're going to be like what's the person who I was going to say a person, but he's a war criminal, so I'm not going to say his name. But someone
who's you just trying to say him into a war criminal? I missed this.
Oh, no.
What?
I was trying to someone who's a person who talks to both sides, who has a foot in both.
Oh, Henry Kissinger?
Yeah. I was going to say Harry Kissinger. I like that you got that, like someone who talks to both sides and war criminal. You're like, oh, Henry Kissinger.
Just like that, boom.
I'm not nearly as old as Kissinger, so.
But you know, you can like kind of get both sides and like.
To the best of my knowledge, I've never committed any war crimes.
Okay, right. This is good to hear, Sam.
And I've driven Corvettes, and I like the Corvette. And you know what I really liked about the Corvette is the little hidden spot, you know, behind the touchscreen. You put your stuff in it.
Oh, the little book of like secret stuff.
Yeah. Oh, Corvettes are wonderful, and they're really great for doing burnouts, which I found out. And like then I got kicked off out of a place because I was doing burnouts on video.
I don't like the giant row of buttons that like between the
drivers. Yeah, that's the main thing I don't like about the C8.
It goes all the way like down from like I feel like it's like starts somewhere behind your head. It feels like it just wraps all the way around you. It's this huge long row of buttons. And it also makes it very awkward. I know it's all about the driver, blah, 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 blah. But if you are the passenger, you have nowhere to put your left arm. Like you kind of do this like, well, I'm activating things. Okay, I'll just hold my left arm like over my shoulder like it's in a sling.
Just hug yourself.
You just have to hug yourself the passenger
because you're so happy you're in a Corvette
you're
with your
like,
friend.
Yay, Corvette. And you give yourself a big hug. Yeah. So that's the only, it looks a little weird to me, and it in practice, like riding in that car, it's this awkward.
You know what it's for? Awkward. It's like you use your left arm to hold up your right arm because as you're driving down the street, you give everyone high fives.
Just always for the high fives. Now you're in a makes car. Sense. I get it now.
You figured it out.
Thanks for explaining this to me.
You have a very fast. You have an American supercar for $60,000.
Yeah.
Hey, come on, that's a screaming deal.
Absolutely,
this is a screaming deal.
All right.
I like the Corvette.
I especially love the sound of a Corvette. You know, when you stand on it and open it up, it's that big V8 just sounds fantastic.
It does sound delicious.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Fantabulous.
I wonder if they'll keep that sound when they go electric. I doubt it.
Or pipe it in, make a fake sound, like you know, like we've created the sound. It's not real.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing about sound.
The
sounds that are coming out of your car, those are tuned. You have to adjust the exhaust.
Stop it, Robbie.
That's not what the
engine. Stop with your reality and your logic. Stop it right now.
I'm very interested to see what Lamborghini wants to do with sound.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the sounds, you know, in performance cars with internal combustion, modern performance cars with internal combustion engines, you know, they do have all these tubes running around feeding in intake sounds and exhaust sounds from various places into the cabin. They're not, they're tuned, but they're not synthesized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're not being made out of bits by your audio system.
Yeah.
But
it's like a clarinet versus a synth.
Yeah, kind of.
It's like All
right. All right. The next thing that GM announced on Monday was that all of their Ultium EVs are getting something that they're calling the Ultium Energy Recovery System, which is a fancy way of saying, we're putting a heat pump in everything, every new EV we're building. So there's actually some cool stuff that they've done with this. One of the things when the Tesla Model 3 came out, I don't know if you've ever watched any of the videos from Sandy Monroe. Monroe and Associates is a company here in Michigan that does teardowns and competitive analysis on vehicles. And when they did a teardown on the Model 3 a few years back, one of the things that got them really excited is something that Tesla calls the octo-valve. So for all the cooling, all the coolant flow around the car between the battery and the motors and everything else, if you look at a Mustang Mach-E, at least a current one, because they're working on an updated version of it, but the current one is using a lot of off-the-shelf components from other internal combustion Ford vehicles. And so you've got a whole bunch of pieces that are routing the coolant flow around. And what Tesla came up with is this one device that's got a bunch of valves in it, and it can flow the coolant in different places depending on where it's needed. And it sounds like GM has done something very similar with their energy recovery system. And so they're using the heat pump for the air conditioning as well as for the heating on their new EVs. And heat pumps are great because they're way more efficient than traditional air conditioners or resistance heaters that you have on a lot of EVs. And so one of the things that they described when I was on this briefing call with them was on the Hummer, when it goes into that WTF mode, what they do in order to get the maximum performance out of the EV, they actually have to cool down the motors but heat up the battery to get it up to its optimal temperature to get the most voltage out of it. And so they use this, they use the heat pump and this this multi-valve thing to circulate coolant through the motor, extract the heat from the motor, and then that heat then gets routed and goes into the battery to warm up the battery to get it to its optimum temperature. And overall, you know, they claim traditionally heat pumps have been more expensive than classic climate control systems in EVs, but they claim because of the way they designed this, you know, they reduced the total number of components, simplified the thing, that cost-wise, it's actually about comparable to the HVAC system on the Bolt, but it's much more efficient, and they claim that it's going to give their new generation of EVs about a 10% boost in range, which we haven't seen much of that on on the Hummer yet. But we'll see how it works out on the Cadillac Lyriq this summer, and that's going to be standard across the board on everything from that little Equinox EV that they're building all the way up to the Hummer and the Silverado and everything in between.
That's cool. Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
I wish I could afford a heat pump for my house, but we only use the air conditioning like 4 days a year. Well, maybe more. Anyway, heat pumps are awesome. If it's the same price, they got it down to the same price as the HVAC system, then, yeah, they're golden.
Yeah, they claim it's cost neutral and also weight neutral, which, they clearly need to do more of that on the Hummer.
Yeah, the Hummer is the Hummer. We just have to accept the fact that the Hummer is just big and audacious, and that's exactly what it's supposed to be, big, audacious, and inefficient.
Yeah.
Hummer.
I love the Hummer. I like love it. It's ridiculous, and I love it.
I mean, driving it. It's ridiculous. I don't think I'd want a Hummer. I think I would prefer the Rivian or the Ford Maverick really almost any other thing.
I saw a maverick on the road the other day. The first maverick I've seen in the wild. I feel like no one can get them. I don't know if they're just like hard to ship here. No one's buying one. But I'm like, oh my God, someone's driving a maverick. It was really kind of cool to see it.
I'm seeing more and more of them. I saw one maverick and one Santa Cruz in Hawaii. So they get
in
the tiny truck.
Huh?
So everyone loves trucks in Hawaii, where it actually makes a lot of sense to own a truck because everyone's surfing or you work, you know, a lot of people
throw your surfboard or scuba gear in the back.
Yeah, yeah, you throw it all in the back.
That makes sense, yeah.
And the roads are always kind of like washed out at some point. So you want something big and tall.
At some point, they're gone.
Like all the truck things that I like, about here in the Bay Area, in Hawaii, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you actually need that.
Yeah. All right. Dodge Hornet. Hornet's coming.
Woohoo!
In an interview earlier this week, Tim Kaniskis, the head of the Dodge brand, confirmed that the Hornet is real. It's coming. I don't think they said exactly when it's going to launch. It was an interview with the Detroit News. It will be the next vehicle to join the Dodge lineup. And right now the Dodge lineup consists of just the Charger, Challenger, and the Durango. They're going to reveal it this August. So my guess is we'll probably see it sometime around the time of the Woodward Dream Cruise. Mm-hmm. It's going to be based on the same platform as the Alfa Romeo Tonale that we saw earlier this year. So compact crossover. It's going to be available as a plug-in hybrid as well. First plug-in hybrid from the Dodge brand. What do you think about bringing a Hornet to the lineup?
Bring back the Magnum.
I would love to see a Magnum.
Electric Magnum. Dope. Oh my God, it's so big. It's a big long. It's all this room for batteries.
Yeah.
All right. I'm derailing it because I'd rather have a Magnum than a Hornet.
It
but
looks
yeah,
really
that's
good.
Fine.
Is this an official image that we're seeing in this picture?
No, that's a render. They photoshopped on something that looks basically like the. This is on the Motor Trend site.
So this is fakey fake fake.
Yeah,
this
means nothing. They put on something that looks like the Durango front end.
Yeah.
Onto a Tonale.
Yeah. I mean,
hopefully it looks something like this.
I mean, if it looked like that, I wouldn't complain. That looks really cool. I think it's kind of, I like it when they, like, Hornet. That's cool. I like that name. Like, it fits along with the little bee thing that's
Super
on all the...
Super bee?
Super bee, thank you. I like it. I'm like,
he's a bee. He's really super. Like, what is
he's super, that really super bee thing. I feel like it keeps a theme. It was that or go with angry cats. And I felt like I'll go with the Hornet.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, Kaniskis reconfirmed is that they are going to show a concept version of the Dodge E-Muscle car sometime this year. No word on exactly when we'll see that. But given that this week they also announced the return of the Detroit Auto Show in September, might seem like a good time to show something off. Like that.
Maybe show that.
Yeah.
People are very, all the muscle car guys I know, more so than the Corvette guys, are freaking out. Maybe I know more muscle car guys, but where the Corvette guys are freaking out about the whole hybrid thing with the Corvette, the muscle car guys are like, you will pry my powerful gas engine from my cold, dead hands. Like, they do not. They're very angry about this. They don't want it.
Have they driven an EV yet?
No. And yeah. I've said, have you driven an EV? Would you take one? I actually convinced one friend who is... like a muscle car guy. I said, will you just go drive an EV for me? Like, I actually convinced him to go drive a Mach-E, and he did. And he's like, well, yeah, that was something else. That was the first EV he's driven, right? It's a really cool car to drive. It was really aggressive. It was this. He's like, no, I don't want it. I want my gas engine. I'm like,
but you can have both, dude.
No, no, Robbie, no. He was just, no, I want it to sound like a Hellcat. I want it to be all Hellcatty. I want it to spew emissions. I want it to do all the things. Otherwise, it is an inferior imitation of what a powerful car should be. And I'm like, okay, I got that. If you drove it and you liked it and you're still saying no, I get a real stick.
I like this thing. I don't want it.
I like this thing, but I won't buy it because stubborn. Okay.
Because I'm stubborn. you know, they'll. You can keep your car.
I know. No one's going to steal it from you. I don't actually have to pry it from your cold, dead hands. You can just drive it as long as you want.
And especially when you consider that, you know, classic muscle cars, you know, these are typically not cars that handle very well. So they're not cars that people take to track days on road courses.
Right.
You know, if they do anything with them, they're going to take them to the drag strip. And that is where an EV is just going to blow it away. I mean, all you got to do is look on YouTube at all the videos of Model S Plaids blowing away Dodge Demons, you know, and other stuff.
Just breaking hearts. Just quietly breaking hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. You can have your muscle car. You don't drive your muscle car to work every day, do you? It's like you get up, you shine it up. You adjust the carburetor.
You don't live in Detroit, do you?
No.
I was like, I don't know. They do. He does drive his muscle car to work every day. But
everyone that I know has a muscle car. They it comes out on the weekend.
That's because you live in California. I'm going to make a gross generalization. I assume that's not the case where you are, Sam.
No. You do see them much more frequently in daily use here around here.
Here, everyone's like, okay, I have my super dope muscle car. But here's the Honda CRV that I drive to work every day.
Yeah.
No. They're like,
I don't want to mess up my muscle car. I have this CRV. I can throw all this crap in it. The kids can make a mess. The muscle car is special. That's your special.
The muscle car is still special, but they'll take it out in the middle of a blizzard in January. Like, there's no reason. There's no case when you cannot take your muscle car out for a drive. What is wrong with you?
I mean, I grew up, my parents had a Javelin, we had a Challenge, a Charger, like these are all the cars I grew up like riding in as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh yeah, muscle cars are great and amazing, but I need to get somewhere sometimes. Sometimes I don't want to have to adjust the carburetor just to go to the store.
They'll have a second car, but like,
I gotta go buy some points.
Car, they're gonna drive that muscle car every chance they get. But there might still also be a crossover, an SUV, or a large sedan, or something that's like, if they've got kids.
When they need to haul some mulch, they pull out the truck or the SUV.
All right.
He actually has a truck, so the truck is the mulch hauling vehicle.
Okay. I just don't want people putting mulch. I just want people putting mulch in the back of a muscle car. That's all I'm saying.
I've never seen him put mulch in the back of his beat up truck. Yes, in his muscle car. No.
I must confess, I have put a few bags of mulch in the trunk of a Charger.
So not a war criminal, but does put mulch in his Charger. I don't know, Robbie. What do we do with that?
I mean, we can call The Hague. We can just check it.
But to what you said earlier, Robbie, about the bringing back the Magnum, I do think that they should bring back the Magnum. And back in, I'll say, like 2008, when Tesla was just starting development work on what would eventually become the Model S, one of their first development mules actually was a Magnum. They took a Magnum body and they stripped the powertrain out and they put a battery and an electric motor in there. And there was some spy photos that popped up of this thing in San Carlos, where Tesla was based at the time. A Magnum with no tailpipes on it or anything.
See?
So there was at least one electric Magnum.
Just one.
Talk Magic Magnum was dope. That was a dope car. And they sold so many. I saw them everywhere. I don't know.
Well, apparently not enough.
I guess not enough. I feel like they were all over the place in California. Like everywhere you looked, there was a Dodge Magnum.
Really? Maybe, I don't ever remember them being that popular here.
They were really popular here.
They were reasonably popular around here too, around Michigan. But
I guess not enough.
Yeah.
California
and Michigan. That was it. Chrysler or FCA employees and some surfers. It was about it.
So very limited, limited range of people. So that's why it's gone.
Yeah. All right. Nissan this week showed off what they're calling their Concept Zero, which is actually a Nissan Skyline sedan, which is the same vehicle that is sold here as the Infiniti Q50, but equipped with a bunch of new sensors, and they're using it for development purposes for their next generation driver assist systems. And among the sensors on this thing are Luminar LiDAR sensors, their first use of Luminar LiDAR. So this is actually Luminar's second partnership with a Japanese automaker. The first one was with Toyota. Toyota still uses Luminar LiDAR on their automated driving development vehicles. But Nissan's using this for LiDAR, and they did a bunch of demos with it. They had a briefing call on Monday showing off some of the crash avoidance capabilities that they've built into this thing. So it's not really designed for full automated driving, but they're using it one of the demos they showed was following another car. The car pulls out of the way because there's a tire rolling down the highway towards them.
Like happens on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know,
I had a tire go through my windshield once.
Jesus, did you really?
Well, not all the way through. It just smashed it up really bad, like down to almost hitting my hand on the steering wheel. So it happens.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never had this is just for you.
I've never had one rolling towards me, but you know, it's pretty common around here, at least, to find tire carcasses laying in the middle of the highway that have been thrown off by trucks.
Oh yeah, because they don't have to, because it's in the inside tire, and they're like, well, I don't have to do anything about that, so it just shoots it off. That's what happened. I had a giant tire carcass from a truck, like smashed through my windshield. That was a fun day.
And you know, so the demo they showed, you know, showed the LiDAR detecting this thing and immediately evading, you know, doing an evasive maneuver to avoid it. Another demo had them avoiding a pedestrian crossing the road, similar to the demos that Luminar was doing at CES this year. It showed a bunch of different demos and showing how the LiDAR can help. You know, and then this is also equipped with higher resolution cameras and radar and stuff. And they're planning to launch something in production around 2025. So,
cool.
It's not that far away.
Yeah.
And now I think about it, I think I've seen one tire rolling on the road once. Just like rolling.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. I've seen dead tire carcasses.
I think it fell off like a truck. Like it didn't fall off a car. Like it fell off a truck and it was just sort of bouncing. It wasn't in a wheel. It was just the tire. It was like.
Well, the thing I've seen a lot of, especially in the last few weeks around here, is deer carcasses on the side of the road.
Oh,
there's been
a
lot. You know, as the fawns have been born, there's been a lot of deer on the move here in Michigan. And I've seen quite a few that have gotten hit. So.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
You're bringing us down there, Sam.
Oh, come on, Sam. Gosh.
Hey, watch out for deer.
So far in 30-plus years of living in Michigan, I've been hit by a deer one time. I've never actually hit a deer.
It ran into your car. That happened to my mom once. It ran into the side of her car and scared the daylights out.
Yeah, driving down the road, it jumped out from the trees on the side across the road and ran into the side of my car and snapped the mirror off.
So, ha ha, gotcha. And then it ran off.
Well, no, then it was laying in the middle of the road.
I was going to say, I feel like that could be the end.
I was stunned. I pulled over and got out and I went to call the sheriff's department to let them know that there's a deer laying in the middle of the road. And by the time somebody picked up the phone, the deer had got up and wandered off back into the woods again. So,
I hit a fawn once, but like I was going, like,
I you guys stop. Let's move on.
No,
we're
no, here, this is
deer. What this, is this?
No, listen
like,
to the story.
Baby,
no, listen
never
to the story. So I hit the fawn. I stopped enough where I just sort of knocked it over and it wouldn't get up. So I stuck it in the back of my dad's 260Z, and I drove, and I was following my, this is when I was in high school, and I was following my girlfriend, she had a truck, so I stuck this little deer, this little fun, in the back of 260Z, and then.
Why did you put it in the truck?
I put it in the back, okay, first of all, high school, so just stupid idiot brain, also we didn't want to jump out and like hurt itself more, so we drive to town, because this is my hometown out in the middle of the mountains, we drive in. We go to the gas station and we call animal control. And then animal control person comes out and he looks at it and he's like, there's nothing wrong with this deer. He's like,
he's just chilling.
He's like, also, this deer should be freaking out. I'm like, what? He's like, this isn't right. This isn't what he shouldn't just be chilling in your car. He should have destroyed the inside of your car as soon as you did this. I'm like, so he told him where to take the deer and he took it back. And yeah.
And that was
so
it.
So it lived.
Yeah.
Oh, unless that guy took him out and ate him or something. But
Let's hope not.
I don't think he did. I think the animal
control. You guys.
I think the animal control guy was just like, "Whoa, this is crazy." But I had a little deer. I was just driving around. He's just looking around, looking out the window, just having like a little puppy. He's just like, "Hey, this is the best day ever."
The way I figure it, you know, there are so many deer in Michigan that, you know, if some small portion of them end up getting hit by cars and being left on the side of the road, you know, you need something to feed all the turkey vultures. Yeah, I mean, the scavengers need to eat too, right?
That's true.
Yes.
All right.
But they aren't cute. Turkey vultures are horrible. Deer are cute.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with turkey vultures. They clean up the roadkill.
They clean up all the dead animals out, not roadkilled, but also roadkilled.
Yeah, the
guys,
the raccoons and possums and, you know, everything else that you know,
things dies.
And people. Well, I mean, every animal dies sooner or later. All right, enough of this.
That was death and war crimes. This is a happen.
How do we go from cars to just killing Bambi everywhere? But go ahead. Okay.
Also raccoons.
Oh my god.
And skunks. Don't forget the skunks.
Oh, poor skunks.
last item. A Colorado car dealer group last year opened up the what is believed to be the first hybrid and EV only used car dealership. It is where is it? Somewhere in Colorado. They were finding that, you know, with the growing interest in EVs and hybrids, that they figured it made sense to have they had an unused lot that was available. In Colorado Springs, here it is, Phil Long EV Outlet in Colorado Springs. And they sell nothing but hybrids and EVs there. And they've been surprised at how well it's been doing. They've been selling about 15 to 20 a month, which is more than they were expecting. It's doing quite well. And I'm figuring we're probably going to be seeing more of these in the coming years.
I mean, if you're looking just to save, like, I want to save money on gas, and you have to go to a car, you know, used lot or a regular lot, and you get there and you're like, okay, well, where are the EVs? Where are the hybrids? Where are the plug-ins? Or I can just go to one stop that has it all. You know, everything there is going to be less expensive.
First, I'm like, why would you do that? But I'm thinking new cars. But if it's used cars, that kind of makes sense. Like, just let's cut out you trying to sell me the used gas-guzzling whatever. I am only here for an EV. All he's going to suggest instead of the one you want is another one. Like,
right.
You
and
know?
The salespeople there, you know, they're not going to try and push you to something else because they have nothing else to sell.
They have nothing else to sell you. They don't have they don't have a charger on the lot that they're trying to get rid of. Nope.
Also, they probably know more about the vehicles on the lot and the technology. I think a lot of times when you go into a dealership and the person trying to sell you a car, trying to sell you a gas car, is because they don't know enough about the EV or the PHEV or the hybrid to give you, like, the answers that you want. So they're like, you know what? It's a lot easier for me to just sell you a charger. How about I just put you in this charger? Boom!
So this EV and hybrid lot has 10 EV chargers installed, including 4 fast chargers, they have they have a store there. Customers can some customers find the chargers via their navigation systems and hop off the interstate. They can come by, grab a drink, and relax. Shop for another used EV. I think it's a pretty cool idea. And I suspect, as I said, I think we'll see more dealers starting to do this over the next year or two.
This is the exact same thing I told. I wrote an article about how Tesla should open up it. This is like 4 years ago, about how Tesla should open up its charging network to other cars, because then it could put, like, at every, like, the nice charger stations, they could put, like, a Model 3 in there. And then you could, like, oh, look at this Model 3 while I'm waiting for my, you know, Chevy Bolt to charge.
To charge up.
Yeah. They're doing the thing that I told Tesla to do. Good job, people.
Somebody listen to you, Robbie.
They, it's not like a crazy genius idea. It's just an idea.
It's a crazy genius idea.
All right. Let's answer a few questions from listeners. First up, Richard DiCarlo. I have this crazy fascination on getting an all-wheel drive 2006 Honda Element. Don't ask me why. I want to customize it, either lowering it with some nice wheels and tires or turning it off-road. I found some clean ones for around $10,000, about 150,000 miles, 20 miles per gallon. Am I crazy for wanting one?
No.
No, but the prices on the Element have like skyrocketed because people love the Element. Like you could get one like 3 years ago for the same car for like $5,000, but it's just gotten more and more people are getting turned on to the Element.
This is just so cool.
It's such a
it
great
looks
car.
Cool. I'm always sad that we sold ours. I loved that thing.
My brother has one. I have to write a first refusal when he goes to sell it.
Right, first refusal. Have you signed an official contract to that effect?
Almost. I'm like, you can't sell it. You have to like let me. I have a drummer friend who sold his Element. I didn't realize he owned an Element. I was so angry.
How dare you?
How dare you sell that and not like tell everybody who's in all these bands who also need to haul gear?
Yeah, who would very much like to have that car.
You know, an Element seems like it would be a prime candidate for an EV conversion.
Yep. I wrote an article about that.
The fuel economy is abysmal.
Yeah. I wrote an article that they should bring a bunch of cars you should bring back that should be EVs, and one of them was the Honda Element. And a lot of people were like, I was going to click on this and then yell at you on Twitter, but I didn't because I wanted to say, I bet you didn't put the Honda Element on there, but you did.
Yeah. I can't yell at you because, oops.
Yeah. Honda Element EV. Make it happen, Honda.
Yeah, get one of these E-Crate motor kits from Ford or GM that they're selling now. And, you know, find an Element that's got a blown engine or something or blown transmission. Rip all that stuff out. Put an electric motor in and a battery. Good to go.
Boom.
Yeah. There you go. Done.
Done.
All right. Coach Cabrera asks, is Toyota going to be able to meet the standards of the F-150 Lightning or Tesla Cybertruck? Well, the Cybertruck should be easy since it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Will it be able to meet the standards of the Lightning?
Eventually.
I was supposed to say, well, when they do something.
That's the thing. Is Toyota like, really doesn't want to do this still. Mm-hmm. They're sort of like, they're like the kid whose parents made them clean their room. They're like, fine, I'll clean it, but I'm not going to do
it. It's like, fine, if I can't ever eat dinner again until I clean my room, I'll clean my stupid room. Fine.
I think once they embrace it, then yes. But even Toyota like really coasts on the fact that you could like shoot a Toyota with a rocket launcher and it'll still drive. Like they really just sort of like cruise. I mean the new Tundra, I feel like some of the tech in there is behind what Toyota or what Ford and Dodge and everyone else is offering, but it's also a Toyota, so you know you're going to buy it. And you're just going to be able to drive it through a brick and roll wall.
A million miles later, it's still going
to
be going.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You can drive it forever. Like, if you do whatever you want to it, and it's just like, okay, I'm fine.
Like, I don't have the newest shiny, but you know I'm going to last forever. That's the Toyota sort of model. It's like, it's not the newest shiny, but you know what? It's going to be fine. Exactly. It'll be fine. Because in 15, 20, 70 years, when you're still driving this, you're not even going to remember
20,
that.
70.
You're not even going to be remembering it. I mean, I think when the Toyota Tundra electric, I don't know what they'll call it, comes out, it'll probably be a little, you know, the specs.
It'll be the BZ Tundra.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit behind, like, whatever the F-150 Lightning is at that time. But also, Toyota, like, even though they don't want to, you know, they're going to be like, well, if we're going to do it, we might as well make it something that'll last 7
like, if we
million
have to do
miles.
It, we might as well make
or
it
maybe
good.
Maybe it'll be the BZ 10T.
Oh, God,
yeah, no. The number is for the size. And
oh,
then
these names. They've
and then the
stop.
Last letter
They're
is for
me.
the body style. So, you know,
just
BZ 10 truck.
Just give it a damn name. Even the RAV4 has
names. Just have names. Names are easy to remember. This alphabet soup with all the num. No, I don't
BZ 4.
And it's like lowercase b, capital Z, 4, capital X. Can we just at least make them all lowercase or
Don't forget the B is also superscripted.
Yeah, it's
Oh,
it's
shush. I don't even do that.
Well, no,
no yeah. See, why do we need to add that level of complication to anyone's life? We don't.
It breaks like every CMS when you superscript it.
Yeah. you can't. You come up with something that is not their way of doing it on a website, and you just do it that way, and you stick with that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's stick with Toyota for Bryn Barenhausen's question. Maybe more of a question for the next time you interview a Toyota rep, but how do they think it was acceptable to deliver the BZ4X with DC fast charge speeds as low as they are, at least for what we've seen from early reviews? An otherwise good vehicle with a rather major flaw. And for those that don't recall, the front-wheel drive BZ4X, which has the Panasonic battery, charges at 130 kilowatts, and the all-wheel drive version that uses the CATL battery, and the same is also true for the Toyota Solterra, only charges at 100 kilowatts maximum. And Brent asks, given their hostility towards BEVs, I can't help but wonder if this is intentional to be like, see, hydrogen is so much faster. Meanwhile, Hyundai and Kia are blowing them out of the water on this front.
I think it's like, well, you know what?
We're not going to, let's not invest in an 800 volt system, which is, you know, one of the reasons why it's slow. It's a 400 volt system. So if you don't want to do it, you're just going to like, we'll do this thing for now and we'll work on it better one later, I guess. There's a lot of heavy sighing at Toyota when they were building this car.
they clearly did this very grudgingly.
Yeah.
It's hard to come up with a good reason. Because there isn't one. Unless they're just, we are so not all in with this plan, everybody. We're not all in.
I do like
the kind of in.
I see. Hydrogen is so much faster. Yeah, if you could find one. I mean, everything's faster.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Yeah.
It'll take you more time to drive around looking for a hydrogen station than it will to spend the hour charging a BZ4X at a TC fast charger.
Well, and you might get to the hydrogen station and it might be out of order, which happens a lot.
Yeah.
I think when I was driving the Mirai, I think on average is like 20% of the stations were out of order. And like six months
considering there's only 45, 46 of them.
Yeah. And then I guess like six, 8 months before that, there was a hydrogen shortage. So like all of them were out of order.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. I just remember driving the Mirai and they were trying to show us how easy it was to fuel up. And we went to this one charging station. It's all just us journalists. There was one regular just consumer who came to fill up her car. And we had a conversation with her. Like she lives with one. It's her day to day. And her biggest frustration was this pump doesn't always work. And if there's, you know, two or three people in line ahead of me, that is a long time. And the next nearest station is so far that it makes it completely impractical. So I just kind of have to like
suck it up.
And she's like, and then the nozzles get frozen. They freeze and you can't release them. And as she's telling us this, we all let her go in front of us. Obviously, we're just on a drive, but she's trying to like go to work or whatever. Like you fuel up. We're just trying to see how this works. If you don't care if we all like, you know, watch. And she couldn't get the nozzle. Like, it literally took, like, 5 or 6 minutes of just kind of fussing around with it before it finally decided, oh, I'm warm enough to remove. And she said, it happens all the time.
Because it gets so cold. You can see frost around.
Yeah, you could. You could literally see, like a little bit of frost around that. And the thing was that the Toyota guys said, yeah, that's our new and improved nozzle that doesn't do that anymore. I'm like, no, we were at the one. Nozzle, and it did it. I was like, so it was like heartbreaking. I'm like, I'm sorry, Mr. Engineer, but no.
All right. Final question from Niall Berkery, who works for a company called AI Motive. I know Niall. Although highly unlikely, what are the implications if Tesla is successful with camera-only full autonomy?
Well, I mean, the implication is that it still doesn't have a backup system.
Yeah,
that's the implication. So it's like, hey, this thing works, unless like one, and you know, there's only one point of failure. Whereas if you have radar, you have LiDAR, you have cameras, you have ultrasound, if you have all those, then you have multiple points before it fails. This is a single point of failure. So yeah, they might be able to get it to work, but it's also going to be the one that fails the most often.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. You need to have diverse set of sensors. You know that can function in different conditions because, you know, a camera system is never going to work in fog. You know, a radar always works in fog. You know, different under different conditions, you know, different lighting conditions, different weather conditions. You know, some sensors are going to work better than others. And when one doesn't work, you want something else as a backup.
Redundancy.
That's redundancy, the name of the game
and
in cars.
Diversity.
Yep.
Redundancy and diversity.
All right. I think that's enough for this week. We're still not war criminals, as far as we know.
No, but apparently, really kill deer a lot. I guess I don't.
I haven't killed any deer.
I have never killed a deer.
I just
I'm
knocked
saying
one
that there's a lot of dead deer around.
Okay,
I just knocked one over. I knocked one over and I took it for a little drive.
I just knocked it over and then I took it for a drive to make up for the infraction. So, okay.
We went to-
and the one contact I had with the deer, it was the deer's fault because it ran into me. I did not hit the deer.
Was attacking.
The deer hit me.
The deer was attacking Sam.
Yeah.
Actually, truth be told, the deer was attacking Sam. We now know the real story.
Yeah. So actually, I'm the only one person here who's actually hit a deer.
All right. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.